Okay, this morning we are going to take a look at, we're entering a new chapter. This is called the parable chapter of the Bible, of Matthew, because Matthew 13 contains several of the most well-known parables, all put together in one place. Matthew tends to do this. He tends to write his gospel by theme rather than chronologically. People in the first century were not as addicted to time as we are, and it didn't seem important to them to write a historical account like the Gospels in chronological order, though for us it's almost strange if it's not in chronological order. But if you look at the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you'll see many of the same stories, but in different order. And one reason is because one gospel writer is writing like a timeline. Another gospel writer is writing according to themes, putting the healings together, the parables together, and so forth. Luke, when he writes his gospel, he's writing it geographically. He's writing it from all the things happening in Galilee and then all the things happening in Judea, even though Jesus went back and forth between the two several times. So we are going to start looking at the parable chapter, but we're not going to start at the beginning. So how's that? I'm just so confused after reading that thing on the English language that I'm not doing anything in a sensible way today. We're going to start with verse 10 of the 13th chapter and read verses 10 to 17. For the simple reason that the parable of the sower, which begins the chapter, has an explanation from Jesus, but the explanation comes after this little interlude, verses 10 to 17. And meanwhile, verses 10 to 17 make a very good introduction to the whole chapter, because it's asking the question, why does Jesus teach in parables? And so that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Reading from the 10th verse of the 13th chapter. The disciples came to Jesus and they asked him, "Why do you speak to the people in parables?" Jesus answered, "The knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they don't see. Though hearing, they don't hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, 'You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving.' For this people's heart has become callous. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and blessed are your ears because they hear. For I tell you the truth, many prophets and righteous men longed to see what you see, but didn't see it, and to hear what you hear, but didn't hear it." I remember when I was in high school one time, I was sitting in an English class, and we were having a discussion about something, and the teacher asked a question, and I raised my hand, and she called on me, and I asked her a question in return. And she said to me, "What's your name?" I said, "David McCarty." She said, "I knew you were Irish. The Irish have a reputation for answering a question with a question." I didn't know that. But that was the first of many times when I frustrated my English teacher And let my Irish heritage come out by responding to her questions with questions. It was something in high school I was proud of. But as I read today's lesson, I'm not so proud of it, because Jesus is the only person I know of who can answer a question and leave you more confused than you were before you asked the question. At least that's how I felt when I was reading his explanation of why he teaches in parables. And I've been wrestling with this all week. How do you make clear something that's confusing to you yourself? The way Jesus describes it, it almost sounds as though God doesn't want us to find him. He doesn't want us to know about him. And so he's just turning it into a game and making it a puzzle. A puzzle that most people give up on before they get too far. But then there were a few things that happened this week that I think God was putting in my life to help me understand. First thing that happened this week, I ran into someone from the old church. Now, I've been preaching for about 30 years. But when I say the old church, it's nice to know most of you know exactly what I'm talking about. This person was very happy to have found the Lord and was sharing the excitement that only a new believer can have. And he went on to explain to me that he was invited by someone to a different church, and he went to the church service, and that pastor explained to him that Jesus died on the cross for his sins. He said, "That's the first I ever heard that." Well, if I weren't so nice, I'd have said, "I beg to differ with you. But I remember seeing you sitting in my congregation for years, and that's what I preach week in and week out." I didn't say it. I knew it wouldn't do any good, and I didn't want to spoil his enthusiasm. But it has happened many times that someone will be dutifully brought to church by his parents or her parents all through the years of childhood and adolescence, will become an adult, will drop away from the church, and then somehow, somewhere, will hear the gospel and respond to it, and then blame his or her church for never teaching him that before, when it was a steady diet week after week after week. I can't complain about this. I'm only stating it as something I've observed. The same thing happens to me, and I think it drives my son crazy. But I'll sit and watch TV, and a movie will come on that I've seen 50 times. The end of the movie, it's got about a half hour to go, and I'll watch it. And he'll say, "Why are you watching it? You've missed most of the movie. You already know how it's going to turn out." Maybe it's because I'm a C, and I like things predictable. I don't know. Most of you won't know what I'm talking about, but I see a few snickers out there in the congregation. But if I know a story is a good story, I don't care where in the story I come in. I'll watch it, I'll listen to it till it's over. Just to have that satisfaction that I had the first time I saw it. But it works the other way, too. I remember when I was in high school, I had to read a book by Ernest Hemingway, The Sun Also Rises. Any of you read that book? It's what they call a classic. And I've decided a classic is a book that someone somewhere had to struggle through because he was told it was a good book. And since he had to struggle through it, he wants everybody to struggle through it. So he calls it a classic, and everyone going through high school English has to read it sooner or later. Well, I stumbled through it. And I wrote my book report, and I promptly forgot about it. And then I went to college. I went to college at Penn State, branch of Penn State up in Erie, Barron campus, Barron College. And I took a four-year course of study, graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in English Literature. And during that time, I had to take certain advanced courses in literature. And Barron, being only a satellite of Penn State, didn't offer too many. And so whatever they offered, I had to take. So they offered a course on Ernest Hemingway and, who was the other guy? William Faulkner. And about 3 weeks, 2 weeks into the course, I had to read a book by Ernest Hemingway. And I said to myself, this should be interesting. I've never read Hemingway before. So I started reading this book. And I got halfway through it, and I'm like, this story sounds familiar. And I read a little bit further, and I'm like, you ever get the feeling, you know, when you meet somebody on the street that you've seen them before, but you just can't remember where? Finally, I got to the last page. I read the last page, and I know where I've seen this book before. I read it in high school. You can see it really stuck with me. But the second time I read through it was a really good book. First time I read through it, I didn't care for it at all. Let me rephrase that. I won't say it was a really good book. I will say I understood what the author was trying to do. First time I read it, it's like, any of you read Moby Dick when you were in school? That's about 600 pages of reading the dictionary to me. It was so boring. Megan read that book. She loved it. Of course, her heart's always been in the sea, so what can I say? But it reminded me that you can hear a story 100 times, but the 101st time that you hear it, you might hear something different. There might be something about that story that affects you in a new way. Sometimes as you grow older, you gain life experiences, or you're going through a period in your life where something new and different is happening, and you read an old or hear an old familiar story, and all of a sudden it has new power because it connects with what you're going through. When I was very young, I watched the movie Fiddler on the Roof. Any of you seen that movie? Or the Broadway show? Well, I saw the movie. I really liked it because I liked the music in it. But a couple years later, I watched it again, and I was surprised at how powerful that story was. And that has stuck with me ever since. And maybe that's why Jesus taught in parables. You know, there's a passage in the Bible repeated in different ways in different places. The most powerful place in which it occurs is the Shema. Now, the Shema is the Hebrew equivalent, I suppose, of the Apostles' Creed. It is sort of the basic statement of what a Jew believes. When they asked Jesus, what is the greatest commandment, he quoted the Shema. Shema is a Hebrew word. It means listen or hear. And it's the first word of the verse from Deuteronomy that says, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength. This idea is repeated in different ways throughout the Bible. One of the most interesting places where it's repeated is in the book, I think, of Jeremiah. Where Jeremiah, or whichever prophet it happens to be, is talking about the people of Judah and Jerusalem going into exile. And he's trying to prepare them for a period of time in which they will be in exile. And he says, because of your sins you will be driven away from your land, and when you are in a foreign land, serving foreign gods, your hearts will turn toward me. And you will look for me, and you will seek me, And when you seek me with your whole heart, I will be found by you. And it's almost as if God is saying, have you found me yet? Do you know who I am? And if we answer no, then he replies, you're not looking hard enough. Do you remember, those of you who are parents, playing hide and go seek with your kids? Have you ever done that? Have you ever played it when you were a child? I used to. I quit, though. Because one time I went hiding and nobody looked for me. I didn't make it difficult. Most people stand behind a tree. I stood in front of the tree. Can't find you anywhere. Here I am, here I am. No, can't find you anywhere. Well, believe it or not, that's what God is doing. He's hiding in plain sight. And the reason we don't see him is exactly the same. We don't want to see him. We don't want to find him. That's our condition. That's the way we were born. We were born with a desire not to know God. Some people say, well, we were born with a fear of God because we know we're sinful. No, no, that's not it. Because there are a lot of people who don't think they're sinful. And yet they don't want to know God. They say they do, and they act like they do, and they go through the motions. But when God tries to make himself known to them, I don't see you. I don't see you, God. Where are you? You might say that Jesus, in using parables to teach, is hiding the truth in plain sight. And he's doing it for a purpose. He's doing it so that those who really want and need desperately to know him will find him. But those who are just play acting will be content and won't look any further. Why did Jesus teach in parables? I have three reasons. I'd like to share them briefly with you. The first reason Jesus preached in parables is because if you're going to learn from a parable, you've got to let yourself get involved in the parable. This is the power of story. And sometimes the power of a story will sneak up from behind and knock me over the head and take me captive. I have sat down at the TV before and turned on a channel to see a movie starting and saying to myself, I don't really want to get involved in watching a movie. And I make the mistake of watching the first 5 or 10 minutes and I'm hooked. And I just have to watch it until it's over. A story can have that kind of power over you. As it presents to you characters and situations and tensions and conflicts that somehow connect with what you're going through. I have found many times that if I try to act like the Apostle Paul, now Paul did not teach with stories. Paul instructed. You read his letters, they're full of instruction. They're not full of stories. You read the Gospels, they're full of stories. But I've discovered you can give somebody instructions and they'll nod and they'll say, yes, I understand, because I've been on both sides of the equation. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. And then you can leave and have them go to do the job and they'll go like this. Now, what am I supposed to do? and which step comes first and which step comes next. Tell someone instructions and you're not involving him in much. I mean, he may take notes, he may listen. But if you really want to get him involved, tell him a story. I never heard yet of someone giving instructions whose audience was rapt. He had their attention. He had them in the palm of his hand as he was giving out his step-by-step instructions. Never heard of that. Someone tells a story. I've noticed it when I preach. I preach doctrine, I talk about the important teachings of the Bible, and people are restless and they cough and they snicker and they look at each other. But when I start telling a story, I get about three sentences into it and you can hear a pin drop. Because that story has just reached out and grabbed the attention of the people I'm talking to. And it's the same with the parable. Parables can do that. One of the things I enjoy more than anything else is to retell a parable, especially an involved parable like the prodigal son. You just mentioned the prodigal son, and most people will know what you're talking about, even if they've never set foot inside a church. That's how powerful that story is. Jesus preached in parables because he wanted people to be involved in what he was saying. He wanted the message to captivate them and to stay with them. And the Christian church has lost this, as it has emphasized doctrine. When I teach confirmation, I give the teenagers a bunch of instruction. And I wonder 5 years later if they remember any of it. But if I meet up with them by chance, and I ask them, do you remember anything that we did during confirmation? If they remember anything, they'll remember a story. I remember the story you told about. That's one reason I have so many illustrations in my sermons. That's why I go off on so many tangents, because the story has captivated me. And I just have to go where it leads. See, if you're not really interested in God, you won't pay that much attention to the story. And there were many people at this point in Jesus' ministry who were there for the miracles, not the message. And so the parables would come and they wouldn't really listen, and then Jesus would do a miracle and they're like, yeah, that's what I came for. Sort of like going to the hockey game for the fights, if you know what I mean. So Jesus decided, well, if that's why they want to come, let them come. But I'm not throwing my pearls before swine. I'll tell the truth, but I don't need to worry about them hearing it, because they'll never let themselves get involved enough in what I'm saying. And so there won't be any danger of someone becoming a Christian who's not really committed to it, or who doesn't really desire it, or doesn't really have a need for it. That's the first reason that Jesus preached in parables. Because you have to let yourself get involved, and those who aren't really interested in God are not going to bother letting themselves get involved, and so they'll never discover the truth. Because to find the truth in a parable, you have to dig. And that leads me to the second reason why Jesus preached in parables. If I say to someone how to run the tape machine over here, how to make a recording of the service or anything, I go over step by step, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they nod and they say yes, yes. Even if they haven't understood a thing I've said. Because somehow we think that if we interrupt and say, I don't understand, that questions our intelligence. Maybe that's the way we were taught in school. You're not supposed to question. Only stupid people ask questions. Anyway, it seems to be very powerfully ingrained, because I can run through a list of instructions and I know the person I'm talking to has no idea what I'm talking about, and I lost them on the first word and they will never ask a question. But somehow, when you're telling a story, the barriers come down. You ever tell a story to a child? And find the child asking a lot of questions. The princess and the pea. Well, why did she lay on a bed that was so high? And you mean to tell me she could really feel the pea that was at the bottom, under the bottom mattress? Why? You tell a child how to tie his shoelaces, he's not going to ask you why. Why do you use this lace instead of this lace? He's not going to ask. You tell them a story, and the questions come out. Jesus knew that if he presented the truth in parable form, people would not be ashamed or afraid to say to him, "I don't understand that one." You know the parable of the dishonest steward? Was cheating at his job, and his master found out about it, so he told him he's going to fire him. Get your affairs in order, you're off the payroll. So he went around to all of his friends and sat down with them and said, "How much do you owe my master?" "I owe 50 bushels of corn." "Scratch out 50 and write 25. "How much wine do you owe my master?" "I owe him 20 barrels." "Well, scratch out 20 and write 15. And he did that with all his friends. When he finished, the master knew what he had done. And he had to admit that the man was rather shrewd, and so he praised him for his shrewdness. And so he said, "See how that dishonest steward worked? It's because the people of this world are much more skilled at dealing with their own than the children of light. And so use your money to make friends, and then they will welcome you when you come into the heavenly habitation." That is one of the strangest parables I have ever heard. I hear that parable every time I read it. I say, "Huh? What are you saying, Jesus?" And I'm always afraid that sometime out of the blue in Sunday school or in Bible study, someone's going to raise their hand and say, "You know, that reminds me of the parable of the unjust steward. What was Jesus getting at in that parable?" And I'd have to say, "You know, I have no idea." You know, with the parable, that's okay. Someone says to me, "Why do we believe in the Trinity?" I better have an answer, because it's important teaching of the church. But a parable, I can admit I don't understand. I'm as lost as you are. Look at today's encounter. The disciples say to Jesus, "Why do you teach in parables?" He says, "I teach in parables so that you'll get it, but the crowd won't." Almost the next thing they say is, "Well, Jesus, we didn't get it, because what did that parable of the sower mean?" And Jesus had to explain it to them. If Jesus is using parables specifically so his apostles and disciples will understand, and they come to him and say, "But we don't understand," obviously Jesus has something additional in mind. He's using a form of teaching that invites us to question. It invites us to use our imagination to understand the story and to recognize that very few parables have one lesson. You ever discover that you read a parable that you've been very familiar with, all of a sudden you see a whole new dimension to it that you never saw before? The prodigal son is a perfect example. People have read that parable for years and have put themselves in the position of the younger son, the one who strayed away from God and yet God welcomed him back. Have you ever put yourself in the position of the older son? Have you ever understood the frustration that made the older son stay away from a festival because he was so jealous of his younger brother? Then comes the time when you experience for yourself the rejection that the father experienced when the younger son said, "I want my inheritance," and he took the money and he left. And there are some parents in their 40s and 50s and 60s and even 70s who will read or hear that parable, and for the first time they'll identify not with the younger son, not with the older son, but with the father who was wounded to the core and never could quit loving his son. In spite of the pain that his son had caused him, he could not give up on his son. Now there's a parable. If someone says to me, what's the meaning of that parable? I just laugh and shake my head. You don't understand parables. Read it again. And when you think you know the meaning, read it again. Because there's always more meaning and more depth in a story than you have any idea. First reason Jesus taught in parables, so that those who weren't really interested wouldn't get involved. And he'd be offering the good stuff only to those who were really searching and really wanted to know God. Second reason Jesus taught in parables, because you can tell a story and someone's not afraid to say, I don't understand. What's the meaning? What's the point? Why did he do this? Why did they do that? The third and final reason why Jesus taught in parables, because his goal is not to give us insight. His goal is not to make us understand God. His goal is to make us understand ourselves. His goal is to make us aware of our need for God. Isn't that what Jesus said? Otherwise they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and then what? Then I would come and heal them. A story is a powerful tool to use to break the heart of an unrepentant person. If that weren't the case, there would be no Hallmark Channel. You ever watch Hallmark movie? Hallmark movies remind me of the movies I used to see when I was a kid. We'd get home from church and turn on the TV and there'd be a Catholic station on, and Catholics had this idea that maybe they ought to use media to reach out to unbelievers, and so they would have stories of people in human conflict. I mean, real human conflict, where everything's not resolved in half an hour, but in half an hour, you do find reason to hope. And all the loose ends aren't tied up like they are in a TV show. But at least you get the feeling by the end of the movie or the show that the loose ends can be tied up. It's going to take work. It's going to take a lowering of obstacles. It's going to take a willingness to forgive. But it can be done. I tell you, you could tell somebody that and it wouldn't mean a thing, but you show them a movie in which it happens and you could see lives change. Stories are powerful. Jesus' main goal in his parables was to get us to see our need for God, to get us accustomed to being dependent on him, to open our eyes to who he is, to make us want to know him. And Jesus used stories because that's what stories are for. Unfortunately, there are many who use stories to do those same things, but instead of making us better, they make us worse. I hear kids who use language that they hear in the movie. I see people who treat other people the way certain people do in the movies. It's not making them more noble, it's making them more crass. Well, stories have the power to do that too. But Jesus understood that story can captivate the mind as few things can. And the story God is writing through human history and in each of our own personal lives, it's a story with eternal consequences. It It's a story that, if we allow it, can be the greatest story ever told. And maybe, just maybe, that's why so many Christians love to tell the story. Heavenly Father, you are writing a story in my life that involves every person in this congregation. And you are writing a story in each of their lives too. That story can turn out a variety of ways. But if we come to know you, the storyteller, and if we give you the freedom to write that story in our lives as you choose, the stories of our lives will become classics that will be told and retold for all eternity. Thank you for the story of Jesus Christ, the greatest story of all.